Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
What text number? 38 maybe? 39? 38. Okay.
Deho pi daiva vashaka kalu karma yavat. Daiva vashaka kalu karma yavat.
Got it?
Swarambakam vati samikshata eva sasu. Tam sa prapancham adiruddha samadhi yoga. Swapnam punarna bhajate prati buddha vastu. Deho pi daiva vashaga kalu karma yavat. Svarambakam prati samikshata eva sasu. Tam sa prapancham adirudha samadhi yoga. Svapnam punarna bhajate prati buddha vastu.
Deha,
the body, api, moreover, daiva vashaga, under the control of the personality of Godhead, kalu, indeed, karma, activities, yavat, as much as. Swa-arambakam, begun by himself. Pratisamikshate, continues to function. Eva, certainly. Sa-asuhu, along with the senses. Tab, the body. Satvapancham, with its expansions. Adiruddha Samadhi Yoga, being situated in Samadhi by yoga practice. Swapna, born in a dream. Puna,
again.
Not. Bhajate. He does accept as his own. Prati buddha. Awake. Vastu. To his constitutional position. Translation of purport. By his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. The body of such a liberated yogi, along with the senses, is taken charge of by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it functions until its destined activities are finished. The liberated devotee, being awake to his constitutional position, and thus situated in samadhi, the highest perfectional stage of yoga, does not accept the byproducts of the material body as his own. Thus, he considers his bodily activities to be like the activities of a body in a dream. Purport. The following questions may be posed. As long as the liberated soul is in contact with the body, why don't the bodily activities affect him? Doesn't he actually become contaminated by the action and reaction of material activities? In answer to such questions, this verse explains that the material body of a liberated soul is taken charge of by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not acting due to the living force of the living entity. It is simply acting as a reaction to past activities. Even after being switched off, an electric fan moves for some time. That movement is not due to the electric current, but it is a continuation of the last movement. Similarly, although a liberated soul appears to be acting just like an ordinary man, his actions are to be accepted as a continuation of past activities. In a dream, one may see himself expanded through many bodies. But when awake, he can understand that those bodies were all false. Similarly, although a liberated soul has the byproducts of the body, children, wife, house, etc., he does not identify himself with these bodily expansions. He knows that they are all products of the material dream. The gross body is made of the gross elements of matter, and the subtle body is made of mind, intelligence, ego, and contaminated consciousness. If one can accept the subtle body of a dream as false and not identify oneself with that body, then certainly an awake person need not identify with the gross body. As one who is awake has no connection with the activities of the body in a dream, an awakened liberated soul has no connection with the activities of the present body. In other words, because he is acquainted with his constitutional position, he never accepts the bodily concept of life. Kapiladev is describing what it is like to be liberated. Liberation can be personal or impersonal. So this description fits both the devotees and the impersonal mumukshus. When they achieve success, when their consciousness has actually become fully purified of attachment to matter and its products, then he gives up his body in the sense of no longer ruling over it. If I renounce something, I can give it to somebody else. It doesn't have to be destroyed. I have money and I don't want the money. I have too much money because the government will tax me for all that money. If I give away some of the money, then I avoid paying taxes. So I give in charity. I don't take the money and burn it just to get rid of it. I get rid of it by giving it to another person. Similarly, the yogi doesn't destroy his body to become free from the attachment, to give it up. Even while still living in the body, the perfected yogi who has earned liberation, but his body is not ready to die because of the prarabdha karma, the living body has a certain duration of time to persist. And it will continue to live until the appointed time of death. So what does the liberated soul do? Does he jump in the fire to kill himself? No, that's not proper activity for a liberated soul. Liberated soul should not perform any sinful act. He's renounced his body. Who is he renounced it to? Unto the Supreme. If he's an impersonalist, then he has the concept of Brahman. And that is his Ishtadeva. He gives everything to Brahman. He doesn't think that anything exists other than Brahman. So everything belongs to Brahman. How can I commit suicide when this is not my body. I cannot destroy something that is not my property. This is property of Brahman. So I must consign it to Brahman. Or the devotee thinks this belongs to Krishna. My body always belonged to Krishna, but now I'm admitting it. And I have no right to destroy the body that is meant to be used in Krishna's service. In both cases, it's not right to just destroy the body in the name of renunciation. One has to give it to somebody else. So, what Kapila Dev describes here is that the body of the liberated soul is taken charge of by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And for the devotee, that means something special. I don't know how the impersonalist can understand this. Your body is taken over by Brahman. That just means merging into a very undefinable impersonal existence. What use does the impersonal absolute truth have for a body? Brahman is disembodied. You know, just like I don't have a driver's license. What use is a car for me? I can't drive it. You can buy me a motorcycle or a car, but I can't use it. I don't know how. I don't have a license to drive. So, Brahman, the impersonal supreme, or a yogi who is united with Brahman, he's given up the bodily concept. He's nirvishesha. What is he going to do with a body? He has no license to drive a body. You know, what is it? Oh, anyway, those who worship the impersonal supreme, klesho dikataraste-sham, avyakta-sakta-dehinam. There's great difficulties involved in trying to merge with the supreme through the impersonal concept. What can it mean to let your body be taken charge of by the impersonal supreme? It doesn't make any sense. Because the impersonal supreme has no use of a material or spiritual body, even spiritual body. So it only makes sense, this higher mode of renunciation, where one doesn't destroy, but one gives it to someone who can make better use of it. You give in charity, or you offer in worship. Idam indraya namamama. This offering is given to Indra, it is no longer mine. So we take our body. Idam shariram Sri Bhagavate namama. I offer this body to the personality of Godhead. It's no longer mine. That's the prayer. And that doesn't have to wait until basmantam shariram, until your body is burned to ashes. You want to give away something in charity that's useful. I want to give a cow in charity. If I'm cheap and miserly, I'll give an old cow that won't give any milk. But what kind of charity is that? So if I give a dead body that's being burnt into ashes as a gift for the Supreme, what's so nice about such a gift? A dead body that's been burnt to ashes. What am I going to do with the ashes? Smear them over my body? Yeah, Krishna's supposed to smear your ashes over his body? Yeah. So give him a living body. You know, something nice, something he can use. A living body, a Vaishnava, a live Vaishnava, Krishna can use. Dead Vaishnava's burnt body is not so much use to Krishna. But when a devotee offers himself before being burnt to ashes, while he's still alive, then Krishna can do so many things with that body. It's like a puppet. You give a child a doll or a puppet, they can play with it. So Prabhupada prayed. Well, I don't remember the Bengali, but I'm a puppet in your hands. Now you make me dance. Make me dance according to your will. As Prabhupada prayed when he came, Markane Bhagavat the Dharma, when Prabhupada came to the shores of America, he said, now I'm a puppet in your hands. I don't know what to do. You brought me to this strange place. I don't know what to do here. So now you
use me as a puppet. So we give this body to Krishna like a doll or a puppet. And we let him use it how he wants to use it. He can make so much use of it. He has so many plans. Krishna has unlimited plans what he can do, even in the material world. Just see how many leelas he has, how many avatars, how many interesting, wonderful things, useful things Krishna knows how to do in the material world. Material world, what to speak of spiritual world. So you have a material body. That's okay. Krishna can use it. So many services can be used, your body can be used for. And the devotee continues living after having turned his body over to Krishna. But he's unattached. He is actually liberated, jivan mukta. The only thing he hasn't done is he hasn't assumed directly his spiritual identity. He's still living in the material world, meditating on his spiritual identity, but he's still encumbered by the material body. Only difference. Otherwise, he's completely liberated. Because his consciousness is perfect. He doesn't consider the activity of his body to have anything to do with his real self. This is the answer, as Prabhupada points out in the purport. There are questions that can be asked. Living soul is pure spirit, but in the material life, he's coming in contact with material contamination. Doesn't that affect him? Doesn't that degrade him? And the answer is no, and here is the proof. If a soul is an illusion, then he seems to be contaminated. But to prove that the soul is not contaminated, then you have to take him out of that contaminated environment and raise him to the level of pure of liberation. Then you see that same soul who was acting in illusion for many lifetimes, once he achieves the liberation, then he again shows his perfect pure form, untouched by matter. Just like you may say, you may argue that water is dirty. Water is dirty. I see it in the river. It's brown. Why do you say that water is pure and has no color and no taste? It smells bad to me. It's brown. It smells like sewage. Jai Shri Krishna Balaram Shri Gauritai. The water I know is that water from the river and the lake and the pond. It's all smelling bad and dirty, brown. Why do you say, philosophically, scientifically, water is pure? The proof is there, though. Take the water out of the lake. Let the dirt in it settle. Clean it. Distill it. And you'll see that water is still pure. You can remove the dirt, and then you see the original water is there. And it is pure with no taste and no color. That is proof. So you take the soul that seems to be dirty and bad smelling and purify him through the process of sadhana, of bhakti and jnana and bhakti. Jnana for the impersonalist, bhakti for the devotees. Both of them have the effect of purifying the soul. And then you see, the soul is pure. That contamination was just circumstantial. It can be removed. The soul doesn't actually become damaged by anything in the material world. There is no change, that permanent change in the condition of the soul. All the contamination is temporary, conditional. Nainam chindanti shastrani, nainam dahati pavakaha, na chainam kledayanti apo, na shoshayati marutaha. As Krishna told Arjuna, weapons can't cut the spirit soul. Water cannot make him wet. He cannot be dried by the wind. He cannot be changed. He cannot be damaged by any material power. To become liberated, you must realize this. Brahma-bhuta, prasanna-atma, na-shochati-na-kamchati. This is the liberated consciousness of identifying oneself as pure spirit, Brahman. Then you can be satisfied and you will not have great desire to achieve things or great anxiety about losing things. You'll realize, I have nothing, I have no interest in this world. I don't care for material things. If they come, okay. If they don't come, that's also okay. If I get money, I'll use it for Krishna. If I get no money, I'll live somehow, or I'll die. If I get food, I'll eat. And if I don't get food, I'll fast. No attachment. That's Brahma-bhuta. Then one can be satisfied, because you're not hankering and lamenting. Otherwise, you may be what you think is a very paka brahmana. Oh, I have so many samskaras. I know so many mantras. My father, his father, and his father were all great Sanskrit pundits. So I am a real brahmana. But you know, money invested in some investment fund. You lose all your money. You lose 5 lakhs. Then where is your equipoise consciousness? Then you're lamenting like anything. You lost 5 lakhs. 5 lakhs invested, completely gone. And you're lamenting for weeks. So what kind of Brahman are you? If you lament, then you're a Shudra. One who is actually situated in Vishuddha Sattva, in pure goodness, is not affected by hankering, mode of passion, and lamentation, mode of ignorance. Na shochati na kankshati. If you have strong material desires, I want money, I want fame, I want beautiful woman, then you're in the mode of passion. And if you're sorrowful and lamenting, you're in the mode of ignorance. But one who is transcendentally situated, he's in pure goodness and he doesn't hanker and lament. And for the devotee, that is achieved by understanding that this whole body belongs to Krishna. Manasa deha geho ye gyokichu mon arpilum tua pade nandakishwara. O Krishna, whatever I might think is mine, body, family, property, I deny that it's mine. I'm claiming that it's yours, and I'm offering it all at your lotus feet. You decide what to do with this property. You want my bank balance to increase, or you want it to become zero? That is your decision. I'm not attached. You want my family life to prosper? That's your choice. You want my family life to be a disaster? That is your choice. This is Adivuddha Samadhi Yoga. The devotee may be living with family. He may be working with and making and using money. But this is perfect yogi. Adivuddha, he's achieved the topmost position. Not just he's beginning or somewhere in the middle of yoga. But Adivuddha Samadhi Yoga. Samadhi is the final stage of yoga practice. Perfect concentration within the heart, full attention on the Supreme. That is Samadhi. Adivuddha Samadhi. He's actually come to that perfect condition. For the devotee, that means he's achieved love of God, prema. In such a condition, he's certainly liberated in the real sense. Mad bhakti labhate param. He's graduated to the ultimate stage of transcendental loving service to the personality of Godhead. Thus, the last sentence in the translation, thus he considers his bodily activities to be like the activities of a body in a dream. When we're dreaming, we may experience some very strange things. There may be terrible, frightening events in our dreams. We may be chased by a tiger. And we may even see ourselves devoured alive by the tiger. Oh, I'm dead. I've been eaten by the tiger. And then you wake up. And you realize, here I am. Even though I got eaten by a tiger, I'm still here. I'm alive. And you realize the dream is not to be taken seriously. Like that, one who is Pratibuddha Vastu, the last word in the verse, who has awakened to the reality. Vastu is reality. Pratibuddha is awakened. One who has woken up to the reality realizes everything I experienced before, this whole life for 50 years, and for 50 million lifetimes before that, it was all a dream. Or one dream after another, one life after another. It was all dreaming. I don't have to take any of it seriously. I may have been devoured by so many tigers, or I may have been a tiger devouring somebody else in my dream. But it wasn't ultimately real. Even though I was chewed to pieces, ripped to shreds by the claws of the tiger, and I'm taken into his belly, I'm still alive, and my body is intact. It means it wasn't real. All the horrible things that ever happened to me, they didn't really happen. No matter what happens to us in the material world, no matter what embarrassment, what horrors we're subjected to, it doesn't do any real damage to the spirit soul. You may become so degraded that you wish you didn't exist, so ashamed of yourself because of your degraded condition. What do my mother, my father, my friends think of me? My wife, I've become this and that, I've become so degraded. And you wish you didn't exist. But actually, you are pure spirit soul. And somehow or other, you can be lifted up out of this condition. Even though you think it's unrecoverable, that everyone, including your wife, your children, your parents, have given up on you. But the Supreme Absolute never gives up. And you can always, from the most degraded condition, the most embarrassing condition, you can regain your transcendental glory. Mahimni sve mahiyate. Even though you're very humbled now and embarrassed by your condition. I'm such an unimportant person. I'm poor. I'm powerless. People don't respect me. But you're not thinking, you're not realizing what you actually are. You're pure spirit. And your real position, your real condition is glorious. Srinvantu aye amritasya putra. Aye dhamani divyani tastuhu. This is from the Vajrasayani White Yajurveda, also quoted in the Upanishads. Oh, please hear, listen. Oh, ye sons of immortality, Amritasya Putra, your original position is in the transcendental abode. Aye divyani, divyani dhamani tastuhu. You were positioned, you were located originally in the transcendental abode. Now you're in illusion. Now you're in embarrassment. But you're forgetting your original glorious condition. Wake up. Wake up. Utishta jagrata prapya varan nibodata. Wake up and remember who you really are. Pratibuddha vastuhu. Then you'll understand that everything you thought was real was actually a dream, was a relative, temporary reality, not the eternal ultimate reality. Hare Krishna. Okay, are there any questions or comments? Okay. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.